All right, good morning, everyone. Today's daf is Baba Kama, daf Kuf Yud Aleph. We are holding at the top of Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, three lines in, the quote from the Mishnah, Natan et HaKesed B'Hayariv, and the Tanur Rabbanan. The Gemara in Amud Aleph is going to discuss various permutations of giving the Asham to one Mishmar of Kohanim and giving the Kesef to another Mishmar of Kohanim and what exactly needs to be done in those circumstances, continuing the discussion from the Mishnah that we saw yesterday. And then the Gemara in Amud Beis starts the new parak, Hagozel Batra, they call it, the second Hagozel. We first had Hagozel Eitzim, and now this parak is going to be called Hagozel Umachil, one who steals and gives it over to somebody to eat. And the Gemara is going to discuss various dinim related to Yeyush Kona, whether a person losing hope of ever retrieving their item, ever recovering their item, allows a kinyan to be made by the other party, and also whether a shinu rishus, whether the changing of possession from one party to another would be enough to acquire the property. So we'll have to get into that discussion a little bit, continuing the discussion that we saw in Perek Meruba in the seventh Perek just a few weeks back. So let's pick up at the Tanur Rabbanan, Kupir Aleph Amud Aleph. Tanur Rabbanan, Natan Asham li Ho Yariv, Vekesef li Yadaya, Yachzir Kesef Etzel Asham, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. The Braisa says that if you give the Asham, you give the Korban that you're supposed to bring for the Gezel Ager to Yehoyariv, to the first Mishmar of Kohanim, and you give the money that you're supposed to return to the Ger, the actual theft, to the following Mishmar, to Yadaya, which is not proper. Really, ideally, it would go to the same Mishmar. Ideally, the Kesef would be brought first. So in such a case, when the Asham goes to the first Mishmar and the Kesef goes to the second Mishmar, then Rabbi Yehuda says, Yachzir Kesef Etzel Asham, that you have to give the Kesef over to the Mishmar, which has the Asham, meaning Yedaya, which is the second Mishmar, which has the money, should give the money back to the first Mishmar, to Yehoyariv, who has the Asham. But Chachamim Omrim Yachzir Asham Etzel Kesef. But the Chachamim disagree, and they say the opposite is true, that you should give the Asham where the Kesef is. So Yehoyariv, which is the first Mishmar which has the Asham, should give it to the second Mishmar, to Yedaya, which has the Kesef. That's the Machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Does the Asham go to the Kesef? Does the Kesef go to the Asham? So ask the Gemara, Hechi Dami, what exactly is the Metzias? What exactly is the case that we're dealing with where this Machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim exists? If the case is that you gave the Asham to Yehoyariv at the proper time when Yehoyariv was supposed to be serving, during their rightful Mishmar of Kihuna, and then you give the Kesef, you give the money to the Mishmar of Yedaya during the proper time for Yedaya to be serving in the Beis HaMikdash, then zeh zacha b'shelo v'zeh zacha b'shelo. I don't understand. It may be that you went out of order, but because you gave everything to the Mishmar that was working at the time, the Asham when you brought it, you gave to Yehoyariv because they were working at the time, and the Kesef when you brought it, you gave to Yedaya because they were working at the time, then everybody should just receive the property that they received. Yehoyariv should hold on to the Asham, and Yedaya should hold on to the Kesef. And as Rashi explains here, the third Rashi on the Amud, Zeh Zacha B'Shelo, V'Zeh Zacha B'Shelo, Unehinami L'Rabbanan Dekansu LeYehoyariv Dekabul Asham Mikame Kesef. Really, each party, each Mishmar, should hold on to the property that they were given. And says Rashi, I understand why the Rabbanan, the Chachamim in this Machlokas, would say, Yachzir Asham Etzel Kesef, that you have to take the Asham that was given to Yehoyariv and give it to Yedaya. I understand why the rabbis, the Chachamim, are penalizing the Mishmar of Yehoyariv because they did something improper. They accepted the Asham before the Kesef was given to any of the Mishmaris of Kehuna. El Rabbi Yehuda, continues Rashi, my time with the Kanis LeYedaya. Why would Rabbi Yehuda penalize Yedaya, who received the Kesef and their proper Mishmar, if everything was given to the Mishmar that was serving at the time that the item was brought? So it makes sense why the Chachamim would penalize Yehoyariv, who seemed to have done something wrong. But Yedaya, who don't seem to have done anything wrong, they just accepted the Kesef. And granted, it was after the Asham had already been given to Yehoyariv, but the Kesef should have been brought first. And now Yedaya is the working Mishmar. Why would Rabbi Yehuda penalize Yedaya and say, Yachzir Kesef Etzel Asham, that the Kesef that was given to Yedaya has to go back to Yehoyariv? So how could we explain this Machlokas? The case seemingly cannot be that each Mishmar was given whatever was brought at the time when that Mishmar was serving. So Amar Rava, Hachav Mayaskin, and says Rava, the real case that we're dealing with is the Yayiv Asham li Yehoyariv, b'mishmarto di Yehoyariv, b'kesef li Yedaya, b'mishmarto di Yehoyariv. The case must be that the asham was given to the first mishmar, to Yehoyarib, while Yehoyarib was serving, and the kesef, the money, was given to the second mishmar, to Yedaya, while the first mishmar, Yehoyarib, was still serving. So everything was not given to the mishmar that was working at the time. And that's how we can explain the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. And Rabbi Yehuda savar, kevan delav mishmeres deyadayahi, leyadayah kansinonai. Rabbi Yehuda holds that because the working mishmar at the time was Yehoyarib, not Yedaiah, we should penalize Yedaiah, who wasn't working at the time. And therefore, hilkach yachzer kesef etzalasham. Therefore, the kesef which was given to Yedaiah, which was not working, has to be returned to the asham, to the mishmar of Yehoyarib, which was working at the time. You penalize the person who took something when they weren't working. Verabbanan savri shelo kedin hu avod b'nei Yehoyarib dekiblu asham mikame kesef. The Chachamim say, yeah, granted Yedaiah wasn't working and Yehoyarib was, but Yehoyarib still did something improper because they accepted the asham before the kesef was brought. Hilkach ledidhu kansinan lehu b'yachzor asham etzel kesef. Therefore, we're going to penalize Yehoyarib for accepting the asham before the kesef was brought, and the asham that Yehoyarib has to be given over to Yedaiah, who received the kesef. So that's the only way we can explain this machlokas, Rabbi Huna and Chachamim. If everybody received the item brought during their mishmar, the brisa would be somewhat insensible. We would at least not be able to understand the position of Rabbi Huda. But if the asham and kesef were both brought during the mishmar of Yehoyarib, And yet the kesef was given to Yedaiah, then we can understand the position of each. Rabbi Huda would say penalize Yedaiah, because they accepted the kesef when they shouldn't have. And the Rabbanan would say penalize Yehoyarib because they accepted the asham before the kesef was brought.
Where do we learn that if you give it out of order, in other words, you gave the asham before the kesef, that it's ma'akev? How do we learn that?
We're going to see that a little bit later on the daf today.
Because that's the way everybody's interpreting it.
Right, that's interpreting that. So we're going to have a couple psukim that seem to indicate that. We're going to bring one pasuk, and then we're going to reject that, because if you understand this one pasuk that way, then you have problems understanding a similar pasuk elsewhere in the Torah. Then the Gemara is going to bring a second source to tell us that the kesef has to be given first. And the Rashi may have even alluded to it yesterday. In the Mishnah, when the Mishnah had said that your Yotze, when you give the Kesef first and the Asham to the second Mishmar, really ideally everything should be given to the same Mishmar, but if they're given to different Mishmars, provided that the Kesef is brought first, then you would be Yotze. So we'll have to see that discussion a little bit later today. God willing, we'll get there. Okay, so let's continue on with Tanya. Tanya, I'm a Rebbe. The Braisa says that according to Rabbi, the divrei Rabbi Yehuda, im kadmu bnei Yehoyarib v'yikrivu es ha'asham, yachzor v'yavi asham acher, v'yakrivuhu bnei Yedaya, v'zachu halalu b'mashe b'yadon. So we just chewed off a lot there. Let's go back and explain. Rabbi says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the mishmar of Yehoyarib comes and brings the asham that was given to them first, when, again, the asham was given to Yehoyarib first, then the kesef was given to Yedaya second, So if Yehoyarib brings the asham, then they have to go back and bring another asham and give it to the mishmar of Yedaiah, and Yedaiah would bring that second asham. V'zachu halalu b'masha b'yadan. And literally, these people were zocha in what is in their hands. So what does that mean exactly? It means that the mishmar of Yehoyarib, who brought this asham, which they shouldn't have brought, they're still zocha in that asham. They get to keep the asham. So ask the Gemara, Amri lemai chazi asham pasalhu. I don't understand. What is the mishmar of Yehoyarib benefiting from by keeping this asham, by being zocha b'masha b'yadan? This is an asham pasal. This asham wasn't supposed to be brought. You need to bring the asham after already giving the kesef. The kesef was given to Yedaiah, and therefore this asham should not have been brought by Yehoyarib. So what are they zocha in? What do they benefit from this asham? So says the Gemara, Amarava le'oro. What it means that they're zocha in is that they get a benefit from the hides of the korban asham. Granted, the asham is pasul; it doesn't do anything for the person who needed to bring the asham, but you can still benefit from the hides. And so if the mishmar of Yehoyarib brings the asham, according to Rabbi Yehuda, they would have to give a new asham to Yedaiah to bring, but they would benefit from the hides of the asham that they brought. So that's the first version.
Who does the giving? Is it the robber who gives the giving? Is it the Beis Din? one of the Kohanim? Who does the giving?
What do you mean by the giving?
Because it was given to the wrong party. It was given to the wrong party. Who
has to give a new asham?
Takes it and gives it to. Is it the robber?
The robber, yeah. The giving, just to clarify, the giving of the money, let's say, and the korban to whoever it's given to, that would be the robber.
Would be the robber.
Yeah.
Okay. So we understand why he has to bring a second asham, because it was his fault that he gave it to the wrong.
Right, but I think in this case, it's the Mishmar of Yehoyarib that has to bring the asham. They're the ones who have to give the asham to Bnei Adai, I think.
Yeah, but they keep the
oros, yeah, because they brought the korban that was given to them incorrectly. They shouldn't have brought it. So it sounds like they're penalized, and they have to bring a new korban.
Why do you have a solution that they hold on to the korban until after the money was given?
So I think that's the ideal. That's the ideal. But the Gemara here is discussing if they went ahead, right? Im kadmu bnei Yehoyarib v'yikrivu es asham, they're supposed to hold on to it. That's the ideal solution that we want, like you're suggesting. But if they went ahead and brought the korban, in which case that's no longer possible, then what happens? So says the Gemara, at least in the first version, what happens is the Bnei Yehoyarib would have to bring a second korban and give it to the Mishmar of Yedaya, and then they'd be able to benefit from the hides also. So that's the first statement that Rebbe makes in the name of Rebbe Yehuda. Now we have a second version, and we're going to have a third comment that Rebbe's going to make. Tanya, Amar Rebbe, the Divrei Rebbe Yehuda, Im Kayam Asham, Yachzir Asham Etzel Kesef. The Braisa says that Rebbe says, according to Rebbe Yehuda, if the Asham that was given to the Mishmar of Yehoyarib is still around, it still hasn't been brought, and we still have it, the Asham has to be given to the Mishmar of Yedaya, who has the Kesef. Yachzir Asham Etzel Kesef, you take the Asham and give it over to the Mishmar that has the Kesef. So ask the Gemara, Bahar Rebbe Yehuda, Yachzir Kesef Etzel Asham Isle. I don't understand. In the Braisa that we started with today, Rebbe Yehuda said, Yachzir Kesef Etzel Asham, that the Kesef that was given to Yedaya has to be given to the Mishmar of Yehoyarib. So how are we saying, who has the Asham? So how are we saying all of a sudden that Yachzir Asham Etzel Kesef, Yehoyarib takes the Asham and gives it to Yedai, who has the Kesef? Rebbe Yehuda said the opposite. So says the Gemara, Hachav Ma'askinan, what exactly is the case that we're dealing with, where this new statement of Rebbe, that Yachzir Asham Etzel Kesef, according to Rebbe Yehuda, would be true? Kegon denafak mishmarto di Yehoyarib velotva'o. The case is where the Mishmar of Yehoyarib, the time of the service of Yehoyarib in the Beis HaMikdash, has ended, and they have not asked for the money from Yedai. Because again, the Asham was given to Yehoyarib, the money was given to Yedaya. We want the money to be given back to Yehoyarib, and if Yehoyarib is still serving, what they should do is they should claim the money from Yedaya. But if the Mishmar of Yehoyarib ends, and they have not claimed the money from Yedaya, then we assume Yachzir Asham Etzel Kesef, then the Asham has to be given to Yedaya, not Yehoyarib. V'hakamash malan, da'achule achilu gabayhu. And what Rebbe is teaching us, according to Rebbe Yehuda, is that if the Mishmar of Yehoyarib ends and they have not claimed the money from Yedaya, then they've been mochel, that money. They've forgiven that money to the Mishmar of Yedaya. And that's why, even though generally Rebbe Yehuda would hold the Yachzir Kesef Etzel Asham, give the money to where the Asham is, here he would say if the Asham is still around, then Yachzir Asham Etzel Kesef, give the Asham to where the money is, dehainu, in the possession of the Bnei Yedaya, the second Mishmar. So that's the second statement that Rebbe makes in the name of Rebbe Yehuda, based on this braisa that we saw. Now, the third statement. Tani idach, Amar Rebbe, the divrei Rebbe Yehuda, im kayam asham, yachzor kesef etzel asham. In this third braisa, Rebbe says, according to Rebbe Yehuda, if the asham is still around, if the asham is still existent, then yachzor kesef etzel asham. So now Rebbe has completely flipped course and said, if the asham is still around, you have to give the money to where the Asham is. The money which is in the property of Yedaya has to be given back to Yehoyarib. So that's actually consistent with what Rabbi Yehuda said all along, Yachzir Kesef Etzel Asham, that Yedaya has to give the money to Yehoyarib, who has the Asham. And therefore the Gemara asks, Pshita, Hachi Isle. That's obvious. That's exactly the position of Rabbi Yehuda. So what are you telling me, that Ledivrei Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the Asham is still around, you have to give the money to where the Asham is? That's exactly the statement of Rabbi Yehuda. You're not adding anything. So says Gemara, Hachav Ma'askinan, what exactly is the case where this comment of Rebbe, according to Rabbi Yehuda, becomes relevant? Kegon denafuk mishmartam dahani udahani belotfo. The case is where the mishmar of both Kohanim has ended. no mishmar of Kohanim, neither Yehoyarif nor Yedaya is still serving in the Beis HaMikdash, and nobody ever asked for the opposite property from the other one. That, let's say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he held Yachzir Kesef Etzel Asham, so the Kesef which Yedaya has is supposed to be given to Yehoyarif. Yehoyarif is supposed to claim it from Yedaya. But let's say that the mishmaros of both of these groups of Kohanim has ended, and the mishmar of Yehoyarif never asked for the money from Yedaya. So nonetheless, even though they never asked for it, says Rabbi Yehuda, Yachzor Kesef Etzel Asham, the money still has to be given to Yehoyarif. And that's a chiddush. Why? That is teaching us something new. Why? Because Ma'u Detema, what might you have thought? Achule Gabi Hadari, you may have thought that the two parties have just been mochel everything to each other because they let the entire process, they let their mishmaros go by without claiming the money from the other property or without claiming the Asham. Because we had just seen in the previous brisa that if the mishmar of Yehoyarif had ended, then Yedaya could really get the Asham, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. But now that the mishmar of Yedaya has ended too, then maybe they don't deserve the Asham anymore. So you may think that they've just forgiven everything to each other, kamash malan de amrinan, but what Rebbe is teaching us is that we say, keman de lotavi lehadru beresha. Since no one claimed property from the other party, then we assume everything should just go back to the way it's supposed to be in the beginning. So meaning, since Rabbi Yehuda holds that Yachzor Kesef Etzel Asham, the money has to be given to where the Asham is, and since both of the Mishmaros Kehuna have ended, what we say is, we go back to the status quo, we go back to the original preference, which is that the money be given from Yedaya to Yehoyarif. So what's going to happen, we're going to see in Rashi just to clarify, but what's going to happen is Yedaya will return the money to Yehoyarif, and the next time Yehoyarif serves, at the end of the cycle of the 24 Mishmaros of Kehuna, Yehoyarif is going to bring the Asham, and they'll have the Kesef together, they'll bring the Korban Asham, they'll have the money that needs to be returned to the Ger, and in that way, they'll complete this process. Let's see Rashi. Kegon denafak mishmartam, the Dura Masko, kegon denafak mishmartam, dahani u dahani. The case is that the mishmaris of Kehuna of both Yehoyarif and Yedaya has ended. Velo tavu bnei Yehoyarif et hakesef bimishmartam. The mishmar of Yehoyarif never asked for the money from Yedaya. Velo bnei Yedaya et ha'asham bimishmartam. And the people of Yedaya, the second mishmar, never asked for the asham after the mishmar of Yehoyarif ended. Ve'itzrich la'ash mo'inen, and what Rebbe is telling us, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is to lo tame a time of the Rabbi Yehuda b'detavu bnei Yehoyarif sheyachzor ba'od mishmartan kayemet. Don't think that Rabbi Yehuda only thinks that the kesef has to go back to where the asham is if the people of Yehoyarif ask for the money when their mishmar is still going. But if they don't ask for the money, then they're just forgiving it to the mishmar of Yedaya, to the second mishmar. Kamash malan. Instead, Rebbe is teaching us, since the second mishmar, the people of Yedaya, never asked for the asham during their mishmar, they never asked for the asham from the people of Yehoyarif, then yachzor kesef etzel asham, then we assume the money still has to go back to where the asham is, v'yakrivuhu b'nei Yehoyarif keshe yachzir Shabbos mishmartam. And the people of Yehoyarif will bring the asham when their week of service returns, when it restarts again, when it's again their turn to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So essentially, three statements that were made by Rebbe about the position of Rabbi Yehuda. The first one, that if the people of Yehoyarif bring the Asham, they have to give a new Asham to give to Yedaya. The second statement is that if the Asham is still around at the end of the Mishmar of Yehoyarif, then the Asham has to be given to Yedaya, who has the Kesef. And the third statement is, if the Asham is still around at the culmination of both of the Mishmars of Yehoyarif and Yedaya, then the money would be given from Yedaya back to Yehoyarif the way it should have in the beginning of the process, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so that's a little bit of the discussion of the Machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda, and the Chachamim. Now we're going to get to Fred's question about how we know that the money has to be given before the Asham. So the Mishnah had said, the Gemara here is quoting from the end of the Mishnah, Shehamevi gzelo ad shelo hevi ashamo yatza, that if you bring the theft before you bring the korban asham, that you're yotza, that fulfills your obligation. But hevi ashamo ad shelo hevi gzelo lo yatza, if you bring the asham before you bring the theft back, then you're not yotza. So ask the Gemara, minan imili, how do I know that?
I just go back to my earlier question about whose does the giving. You said it was the robber,
right?
But But it says, Shaha Mevi Gezelo. What does Mevi mean? He brought it. Where did he bring it? To the Mikdash, right?
Right.
So as soon as he brings it to the Mikdash, he's fulfilled his obligation. He didn't actually give it to each of the families. It should have said, Benasan Gezelo. But it doesn't say that. It says, Shahabi. I'm doing a little diuk here in the Mishnah.
Right, you're saying Hanosein would have been to give it to the Ger, but Hamevi is to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash?
The Nosein was to give it to one of the Kohanic family who was on the Mishmar. But Hamevi means he just brought it to the Mikdash. And he's discharged. If, let's say he stole a cow,
yeah,
or money, and he brought his sheep. Oh, was it a Usher when you bring a sheep? Yeah, I think it's a sheep. So as soon as he brings it to the Mikdash, it seems from the Mishnah that he's discharged his obligation and somebody else gave it to the Mishnah.
No, so I think...
What is it? No, son, I'm just being a little...
Yeah, I think Hamevi also means... I think Hamevi also means that you bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, but who's around in the Beis HaMikdash? The only people around at the Kohanim who are serving that week in the Beis HaMikdash. So I think it's the Kohanim are going to take it directly from you.
And then you got the Gizbar. I mean, you got a lot of people. It's not just an empty place.
Yeah, I mean, essentially it's going to get to the Mishmar of Kohanim eventually. I know it's not an empty place. There are other people around, but I think Hamevi, you're doing the proper Avodah.
I just think
Hamevi
is not the word I would have used.
Right.
Maybe it has a meaning. Maybe not, but I just raise it.
For sure, I hear the diuk. Great point. So it says the Gemara, Minahani Mili. How do I know that if you bring the Asham before you bring the Gzela, before you bring the theft, that you're not Yotze? So Amar Rava, Rava says, the Amar Kra, Ha'asham Hamushav Lashem Lakohen Milevad Ela Kippurim Asher Yechaper Bo. Mechlal Dekasef Bereisha. The Pasuk, when it's referring to this whole process, says the principle that you return to Hashem, to the Kohen, aside from the El HaKippurim, the ram of atonement through which you receive atonement. And so says Rava, that implies that the money has to be brought in the beginning, because HaAsham, the guilt literally, but we assume that that refers to the principal. So the payment, the money that you have to bring, is described first, and that implies that you're supposed to bring that before the Korban. If you bring the Korban first, you wouldn't be Yotze. So Amar Ahume Rabban and the Rava, one of the rabbis asked Rava, he said, Ela me'ata milevado ata boker, hachinami michlao de musaf in Beresha. If that's the way you're going to explain these psukim when it comes to Gezel Hager, you're going to have a major issue when it comes to some other psukim in the Torah which have parallel language. Because the Torah in Parshas Pinchas, in the context of the korban musaf, fim, the musaf offerings that are brought, says you need to bring all these korbanos on the holiday and the musaf offerings, Milivad, aside from the Olas Haboker, the morning offering, the daily Tamid morning offering they have to bring every single day. So is that to suggest, since the Torah uses the word Milivad in the context of the Asham by Gezel Hager and the Korban that has to be brought, and the Torah uses the word Milivad aside from in the context of the Musafin, is that to suggest that the Korban Musaf has to be brought before the Korban Tamid Shel Shachar, before the morning daily offering that's brought? Ba'atanya, but we have a brisa which says directly against that. Minayin Shelo Yehei Davar Kodem LeTamid Shel Shachar. How do I know that nothing can be brought before the Korban Tamid that's brought in the morning? Tamid Lomar Ba'arach Alea Ha'ula. Because the Torah tells us that you have to bring the Ola on the Mizbeach. Ve'amar Rava Ha'ola Ola Rishona. Rava says that we can infer from the hay that's used in describing the Korban Ola in the beginning, that Ha'ola, Ola Rishona, that the Ola refers to the first Ola. So that tells us that the Korban Tamid, which is brought, has to be the first offering. So if you're going to explain that Milavad, aside from the Korban that you have to bring for Gezer Al-Ager, means that that has to be second, then you'd have to explain that Milevad Olat HaBoker, aside from the daily offering that's brought, the daily offering also has to be second. But we know that's not true. The daily offering has to be first. So Amar Lei, therefore Rava responds, Ana me'asher yechaper bo nafgale, va'adayin lo kiper. Says Rava, I'm not learning from the word Milevad in which case you'd have a question from the verse by the Musafin and the Korban Tamid. He says, really, I'm learning from the verse which says, Asher Yechaper Bo, the Korban that you're going to bring for the Gzela, through which you will receive atonement. And says Rava, that implies from which you will receive atonement implies that you have not yet received atonement. So the Torah first tells us that you need to bring the theft back. And then the Torah tells us, aside from the Korban, through which you will receive atonement, through which sounds like it's in the future, implying that you have not yet received atonement. And nonetheless, you're required to bring the Asham, the Asham, which is the principle of the theft. So that tells us that you have to bring the money before you bring the Korban. And if you bring the Korban before you bring the money, you would not be Yotze.
Maybe that's a mitzvah and it's not Ma'akev.
Right, that's a good question.
We have plenty of examples of that, you know.
Right. Yeah, so that I'm not sure. Sometimes the Gemara says we need a second pasuk to tell us Shona Lavakasav La'akev, but we have a second pasuk to tell us that it is Ma'akev. Other times that doesn't seem to be a requirement. So how we know for sure that that's Ma'akev, I'm not sure. It's a good question.
Well, let's go. We don't have much time.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Okay, so now the Gemara goes on discussing, let's say you give the Keren and you don't give the Chomesh. So, Eina Chomesh Ma'akev, the extra fifth that you need to pay is not Ma'akev, is not binding. So, Tan Rabbanan says the Gemara, we have a Braisa. Minayin Shem Hevi Mi'iloso, B'lo Hevi Hashomo, Hashomo, B'lo Hevi Mi'iloso, Shelo Yatza. How do I know? This is now in the context, Rashi says, Mi'iloso Keren Dehektish Shemo'obo. This is referring to when you derive benefit improperly from Hektish property. And you have to bring a Korban Me'ila, you have to bring an Asham Me'ilos for the benefit that you derive. So ask the Gemara, how do I know that if you bring the Korban Me'ila, but you don't bring the principal amount that you receive value from back to the Beis HaMikdash, or you bring the principal amount but you don't bring the Korban Me'ila, how do I know that you haven't fulfilled your obligation to repent from the Me'ila that you did? Talmud Omar Be'el HaAsham Benislach Lo, because the Pasuk tells us Be'el HaAsham Minislach lo, and we assume Be'el is referring to the Korban, and Ha'asham is referring to the principal, the payment that you have to make, and only then, Vinislach lo. If we look in Rashi, Be'el Ha'asham, Minislach lo, Mashma ein slicha ela b'shneihem. The Pasuk implies that you can only receive forgiveness through both of them. Ayil kimashma, oh, the ram, as it's implied, the literal meaning the Korban, and Ha'asham is Karen. Ha'asham refers to the principal, the payment that you have to make. So that's how we know that you need both the Me'ila and the principal. And we know Shem Hevi Ashamo, Shelo Hevi Milaso, Shelo Yatza. How do I know that if you bring the money before you bring the Korban Me'ila that you're not Yotze? Talmud Lomar Be'el Ha'asham, Ha'asham Bikfar. Because the Pasuk says Be'el Ha'asham, that you have to bring the Korban and you also have to bring the principal. And that's Mashma Ha'asham Bikfar. If we look at Rashi, Be'el Ha'asham, second to last Rashi on the page, Mashma Be'ayel Shuba Chova La'asham Shehu Keren Alma Keren Beresha Maisi. The Torah describes it that the ram comes as an obligation for the principal, and that suggests that the principal is paid in the beginning. Kishem Sha'ayel, good. Now, Yachol Kishem Sha'ayel V'asham Ma'akvim Kach Chomesh Ma'akev. You might think that just like the ram and the principal are Ma'akev, are binding, so too is the extra fifth that you have to pay binding. Talmud Omer Be'el Ha'asham B'nislach Lo. Ayel V'asham Ma'akvim B'hektish Be'en Chomesh Ma'akev. So you might think that just like the ram and the principal are Ma'akev, so too is the Chomesh. But the Torah tells us, as the pasuk that we've already seen, that Be'el Ha'asham Benislach Lo, that you need the ram and you need the principal. So it's only the ram and the principal that are Ma'akev when it comes to a Korban Me'ila, but the Chomesh, the extra fifth, is not Ma'akev. And the Gemara says that we can just learn that principle out from the Yilamad Hektish Mehedyo, the Hedyo Mehektish. We can learn different laws back and forth from the Korban Me'ilos, which has to be brought, which is Hektish, and from the Korban that has to be brought by the theft of a ger. We can learn back and forth between the two. Hekdish Mehedyo, we can learn about the Asham Me'ilos from the Korban by Gezel Hager. Then Ma Asham Dehatam Keren, Af Asham Dehacha Keren. Just like the Asham that's referred to in the context of the theft of a ger is referring to the principal amount of money, so too the Asham that's referred to by the Korban Me'ilos is referring to the principal amount. Vehedyo Mehekdish, and we can also learn get about Gezel Ager from Hekdesh, then Ma Hekdesh ain't Chomesh Ma'akev, just like by a Korban Me'ilos, the extra fifth that you have to pay is not binding, is not Ma'akev, Afhed Yonami ain't Chomesh Ma'akev. So too, when it comes to Gezel Ager, the extra fifth that you have to pay is not binding, is not Ma'akev. Hadron Allah Hagozel Eitzim. And with that, we've concluded the ninth parak of Baba Kama, parak Hagozel Kama, the first parak of Hagozel, the first parak of theft, and we're ready for Hagozel Uma'achil, one who steals and feeds, what they call Hagozel Batra, the second parak of Hagozel. So says the Mishnah at the top of Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. Hagozel Uma'achil at Bonav, V'iniach Lifneim, Peturin Milishalim. If somebody steals and feeds whatever they stole to his children, V'hiniach Lifneim, literally you would say, and he puts it in front of them, but as Rashi points out, oh, she'iniach Lifneim Agzela, Agzela, or the Bach chains it, she'agzela kayamet. Whether you feed it to your children or you put it in front of them, you would be exempt from paying. They would be exempt from paying, rather. But the Gemara is going to clarify exactly what we mean. If that which was stolen is something which creates strong, firm responsibility, then they would be obligated to pay. And the Gemara is going to clarify essentially all of these clauses. This Mishnah is somewhat unclear. So Amar of Chista, at the beginning of the Gemara of Chista says, Gezel v'lonis yashu abaylim. If somebody steals and the original owner did not give up hope of recovering the object that was stolen from them, uva achler ve'achlo, and then somebody else, not the person who stole it, comes and eats whatever was stolen, then rotza mizegove. They may have skipped the word ve'achlo mimenu. The person comes, but I think that word is taken out by the riff and the rush. Ve'achlo mimenu. If the person eats the theft that was taken, then the person who was stolen from can collect payment either from the person who stole it or from the person who ate it. My time, why is that? Why can he receive payment from either party? Because kol kama d'lonis yashu abaylim b'shute demarekai. So long as the original owner has not given up hope of finding the item, it's considered as if it's still in his rishos. It's considered as if that person is still holding on to the property, and therefore, says Rashi, Birshusei Demari Kai, it's as if it's in the property of the person who owned it to begin with. Vizeh She'achlo Nasa Kegozlo Mibailov. The person who came and ate it, who consumed the property, is considered as if he stole it from the original owner. So again, something is stolen. Since there's no Yeish, the person hasn't given up hope of finding that item, it's still considered in his Rishus. The person who comes to eat it is considered as if he's taking it from the original owner's Rishus, and therefore the thief, the original thief, is considered a thief, but the person who ate it is also considered a thief. And therefore, the Bailim can collect payment from either party, whoever they want.
Even if the person who ate it did not know it was stolen.
Seemingly, even if the person who ate it did not know it was stolen, because at the end of the day, it's still in the property of the original owner. Technically, it's considered stolen nonetheless. But the Mishnah is going to pose the Gemara is going to pose a question to that from the Mishnah, because the Mishnah said Tznan Hagozel Ma'achil Abana Biniach Lifneim Peturim Milishalim. The Mishnah said that if one steals and feeds it to their children or puts it in front of them, that they'd be Pater Milishalim. We're assuming the children would be Pater Milishalim. So how can you tell me that if somebody eats something that was stolen, then the person who was stolen from can collect from either party, even from the party who just ate it but didn't steal it, so to speak, didn't take it out of his rishus. So how can you tell me that that's true, Rav Chista, if the Mishnah says clearly that when children eat from something their father stole, the children are exempt from payment? So that seems to refute Rav Chista. So Amar Lecha Rav Chista, Kitanya Hahi Le'achar Yeish. Says Rav Chista, that Mishnah is speaking about after Yeish. Rav Chista only said, if the Bailim, if the original owner, has not given up hope of recovering the item, then the person who eats it is considered as if he's stealing it from the rishus of the Bailim, and that's why the owner can collect payment from either party. But the Mishnah, which says that the children are exempt from payment when their father feeds to them, is talking about where the owner did give up hope. If the owner did give up hope of ever recovering the item, then when the children eat it, it's not as if they're stealing from the original owner, because it's no longer considered in the property in the rishus of the original owner. So this Mishnah does not pose...
If there was Yeush and the children ate it, they don't have to pay back. But does the father still have an obligation to pay, the one who stole?
Yeah, the assumption would be that the father would still have to pay back, although it's possible that...
I'm surprised the Gemara doesn't say that.
Right, because the focus here in this Mishnah is really about the children. So yeah, that seems to be the simple understanding. Now, Says the Gemara Vayter, the Mishnah had said that if the father puts the property in front of the children, they'd be exempt from payment. So Amar Rami Bar Chama, Zos Omeres, Rishus Yoresh, Kirshus Lokeach. Rami Bar Chama says, this Mishnah seems to teach us that the property of an heir, the property of someone who inherits, is like the property of somebody who buys. So what exactly does that mean? Let's see Rashi. Zos Omeres, Tiktani V'niach Lefneim Pturim. The fact that the Mishnah says, if the father puts the property in front of the children, they're exempt from payment, that tells us that Rishus Yoresh is Kirshus Lokeach Tami. The Havila Kirshus Acheres. It's treated like a different property, like a different estate. Since Rav Chisda just told us that the Mishnah is talking about after the original owner has given up hope of recovering the item, the heirs, the children of this person, acquire the property, whatever was stolen, through the yeyush, through the losing of hope of the original owner, and through the change of property from the father to the children. And this relates to Fred's question, why the Mishnah doesn't tell us anything about the father. If we were only assuming that there was Yeyush here, but there was no Shinuri Rishus, that the changing of the possession from the father to the children was not a change of Rishus, and nonetheless you'd be exempt just through Yeyush, you wouldn't have to pay just through Yeyush, then we would have expected that the Mishnah would tell us that the father is exempt. So from the fact that the Mishnah doesn't tell us anything about the father, we can infer that Yeyush alone, that just the losing of hope of the original owner, is not enough to allow the property to be acquired by the father, or by the opposite party. What you need is both Yeyush and Shinui Rishus, the losing of hope of the original owner, and the change in possession from the father to the heirs. And that tells us that the property of heirs, the changing of property from someone who gives over as an inheritance to the inheritors, is like the changing of property that happens when somebody sells something from one person to another. Now Rava disagrees with Rami Bar Chama, and he says Rishus Yoresh Lav Kirshus Lokeach Tami. The change of property to an heir is not like the change of property to a buyer. V'hach b'mayaskinan kishe achalum. And here, what we're dealing with, the Mishnah, which says that the children would be pater, it's only talking about a case where the children ate the property after their father died, and therefore the original owner cannot claim payment from the children, because they didn't steal the item. They only ate the item, but the father had already died. So we're assuming that really Rishus Yoresh is Lav Kirshus Lokeach Tami. The change of property to the heirs is not a significant change of Rishus, certainly not like a normal sale. And the only reason the children are exempt from payment is because they ate the property and the property is no longer existent, and they weren't the ones who stole it. But if the property was still around, presumably they'd be obligated to return it. If the Gzela was Kayemes, if the property was still existent, they would have to return it, because Shinui Rishus, the changing of property, the changing of possession to the heirs, is not a significant change in property, and it would not be enough for them to acquire the property. So ask the Gemara, how could you say that the case is where the children ate the theft? Since the continuation, the Mishnah goes on to say that if you were dealing with something which has full liability of property, Rashi says, what does that mean? Shiyesh ba'achraya, something where there's full responsibility. Kigon davar hanikar l'rabim v'nira kolsha, something which is easily identifiable to the masses and can be seen at any point. Kein karka o kigon talas suksus, like land, which we always refer to land as nechasim shiyesh ba'achraya, property for which there is full responsibility. Or says Rashi, like a cloak or like a garment. Since the continuation of the Mishnah says that if it was a davar sheyesh ba'achrayas, something with full responsibility, you'd be obligated to pay, that tells us that the beginning of the Mishnah is dealing with a case where the gzela is still existent. The gzela is still around, and nonetheless the children are exempt from paying. So don't tell me, Rava, that the reason the Mishnah says the children are exempt from paying is because they consume the property. The Mishnah seems to be dealing with a case where the children did not consume the property, and nonetheless they're exempt, and that seems to be because of Rami Bar Chama's principle, that Rishus Yoresh is Kirshus Lokeach Tami, that the possession of the heir is considered like the possession of a buyer, and thus the children have acquired this property through Yeyush and Shinuri Rishus, through the losing of hope of the original owner, and through the changing of possession from their father to them. So Amar lecha Rava, hachi kamar. Rava says, no, you totally misunderstood. What the Mishnah means is, im hiniach lahem avim achrayas nechasim chayavim l'shalem. It's not that the property is still around, because we're dealing with property which has achrayas, which has full responsibility. Rather, it means that their father left them over property with which to pay for the theft. But then ask the Gemara, you can't establish the case as one where the father left them money with which to pay for the theft. V'hamani le'rebi le'rabi Shimon Brei, Rebbe taught Rabbi Shimon his son that the case of the Mishnah, when it says that you have a davar sheyesh ba'achrayas, something with full responsibility, the children are obligated to pay, is lo davar sheyesh ba'achrayas mamish. That doesn't mean literally something that has full responsibility like land. Ela afilu para v'choresh ba chamor mechamer acharav chayavin lahachzir mipnei kavod avien. Even if it's just a cow with which they can thresh, they can plow the field, or a donkey, and they can use the donkey to carry their possessions, you'd still be obligated to return such theft. And if that's the case, we must be dealing with gzeila kayames, we must be dealing with theft which is still existent, because Rebbe taught Rabbi Shimon Brei that the theft that we're talking about could just be like a cow or like a donkey. So if the gzeila is still kayames, if the gzeila is still around, why would the children be obligated to pay if not for the fact of Rami Bar Chama, that through Yeish and Chinui Rishus, through the losing of hope of the original owner and the change of possession from the father to the children, is Kona, and the children acquire the theft and no longer have to pay. El Amar Rava, so says Rava, I still need to defend myself. I'm not accepting this explanation, Rami Bar Chama. Ki Shachivna, Rav Oshia Navik Levase, says Rava, when I die, Rav Oshia is going to come out to greet me. Why? The Taritzna Masnisin Kivase, because I'm going to explain the Mishnah like Rabbi Oshia. The Tani Rabbi Oshia, because Rabbi Oshia taught, Hagozel Umachil Esbanav Peturin Milashalim. If one steals and feeds it to his children, they'd be exempt from paying. Hiniach Lifneim, if he puts it in front of them, then Gzela Kayemes Chayavin. If he puts it in front of them, but they haven't consumed it, if it's still around, they'd be obligated to pay. Ein gzeila kayames peturin. But if the gzeila is not existent anymore, then they'd be exempt from payment. Hiniach lahem aviyem achrayas nechasim chayavin neshalim. And if their father left them over property with which they can pay for the theft, then they'd be obligated to pay. So Rava finds this statement of Rabbi Yoshia with which he can substantiate his read of the Mishnah, that the Mishnah only says the children are exempt when the gzela is no longer around, because then it's not yeyush and shinu rishus which exempts them, like Rami Bar Chama. Really, it's just the fact that the gzela is not around. If the gzela is around, then the children would be obligated to pay, and certainly if the father left them property with which to pay, then they'd be obligated to pay. So Rava ultimately is able to establish his read of the Mishnah as well, and he's able to dismiss Rami Bar Chama. Now continues the Gemara, Amar Mar, Ein gzeila kayames peturin. What we've just assumed is that if the theft is no longer around, the children would not be obligated to pay for it. So says the Gemara, Neima tehavi tiyuv to the Rav Chista. Maybe that refutes Rav Chista, because Rav Chista said before that if somebody steals and then someone else comes and eats the theft, then the person who originally owned the item could collect from either party. So if we're assuming that when the theft is no longer around, the children are exempt from paying, that would seem to be against Rav Chista, because Rav Chista said that the person who was stolen from can collect from either party. So Amar Lecha Rav Chista, Kitanya Hayi La'achar Yeish. Says Rav Chista, the case where the children are exempt from paying if the theft is no longer around is talking about after Yeish, after the original owners gave up hope of ever collecting the item. And Rav Chista only made a statement that you could collect from either party before Yeish, right? If we go back to Rav Chista, he said clearly, Gezel, Velonis Yashu, Abaylim, if they were theft and the owner did not give up hope of recovering the item, so only then would Rav Chista say you could collect from either party. But if there was Yeish, then you would not be able to collect from either party, and thus the Mishnah, which says the children would be exempt from payment if the theft is not around, is not a question on Rav Chista. We'll just conclude with one more Amar Mar, very short. Amar Mar, Gzela Kayames Chayavin L'Shalem. So again, quoting based on the Mishnah, that if the theft is still around, the children would be obligated to pay. So Neima Tehavi Tiyuv to the Rami Bar Chama. Maybe that goes against Rami Bar Chama. Why? Because we're assuming, as Rav Chista just established, that this statement, that Gzela Kayames Chayavin L'Shalem, that if the gzela is still around, you have to pay, is after there's yeyush. And after there's yeyush, if the original owner has given up hope, So Rami Bar Chama told us that with Yeyush and Shinui Rishus, with Yeyush and the changing of possession from the father to the children would be exempt from paying. And it sounds like we're saying here that even with Yeyush and the changing of property, that the children are still obligated to pay. So Amar Lecha Rami Bar Chama Kitan Yahi Lifnei Yeyush. Says Rami Bar Chama, the only case where the children would still be obligated to pay is before Yeyush. Don't assume that this is a case where you have Yeyush, where the original owner gave up hope, and a change of possession from the father to the children. Really, there's no Yeyush, and that's why the children are still obligated to pay. But according to me, Rami Bar Chama, if there was Yeyush, then the children would be exempt from paying, even if the Gzela is still Kayamet, even if the Gzela is still existent. Okay, I think we'll hold it over here for today, and we'll try to pick up tomorrow, Rav Anna Bar Abba. Yashar Koach.